Smith versus Hunt.
Morning. May it please the Court, I'm Michael Robbins. I represent Plaintiff Appellant. The sole issue before the Court in this appeal is the admission of evidence during trial that the plaintiff used heroin 5 to 6 hours before his initial arrest, his first arrest on December 7th, and whether or not that evidence tainted the trial in such a way that it inextricably prevented the plaintiff from receiving a fair trial. There was no foundation whatsoever for the admission of this evidence, certainly no expert testimony, but additionally there was no evidence of impairment. There was no foundational evidence. It didn't.
Could I ask you, while you're on the no evidence theme,
sure.
We know that there's some testimony, I realize he may deny it, but there's some testimony that when he's in the emergency room, he asks for Dilaudid by name. But is there any testimony that he personally at that moment knew that Dilaudid is an opiate?
Absolutely not. And the suggestion from the emergency room doctor that somebody who's in the street drug milieu would ask for Dilaudid by name is incomprehensible. I don't think that's in any street drug user's lexicon.
Well, even if he did, for some reason, I guess I wanted to know how far we could even take that. You know, if somebody asked for Zoloft by name,
right,
would we necessarily think that they knew the underlying chemical name for Zoloft?
Well, this dispute in the record about whether or not he asked for that drug by name, which he denied, asking for that or any other drug.
That's a question of credibility.
Right.
Yes.
No, I'm going to assume.
It was resolved against you. So
right.
Well, but no, Your Honor. It created the reason why the district court again reversed itself and allowed the admission of the evidence. And purportedly for the limited purpose of establishing damages, the district.
Well, I was talking about the implication of that you said that no implication of that there's no testimony as to what knowledge he had. But the jury has already resolved the question of what he knew and what he didn't know, so go from there.
Well, the jury said,
and here's where I think your starting point has to be, the jury decides that it believes the people who said he did ask for Dilaudid by name. Now, my question is sort of the next level. Do we know that he knew how it related chemically to heroin?
Well,
and
yes.
You're saying, so you think there is evidence that he knew it was in the same family, let's say.
No, I think he.
There is no evidence.
There's no evidence. Well,
because the whole theory of damages is, I'm not really hurting at all, despite the fact that my finger's about to fall off. I am just looking for a free fix.
Well, that's effectively, the judge said plaintiff's motivation in getting pain medication was now at issue. And the difficulty in that is that assumes one must draw inferences on the effect of heroin. One must assume that there's sufficient heroin in his body to motivate him.
Right.
Or to,
now I get you. There's
right.
No foundation for
no
any
foundation
of that.
Whatsoever.
Yeah.
And this issue, whether or not this evidence was admissible, was a constant theme throughout the trial. I mean, our motion in limine was initially denied. And the judge openly speculated regarding the effects of heroin, thinking that it might have caused him to do something. And the next day he came back and our motion for reconsideration was granted. And because there is nothing to establish the fact that he was under the influence, and it goes to the question of foundation. And so it came in through this ancillary way when this question about what he said or didn't say in the emergency room arose. But
why did any of this really matter to the ultimate outcome of the case?
Enormously, and I'll tell you why. There are two things that are not in dispute in this case. One is that he suffered an excruciatingly painful injury at the time of his arrest. He claimed he was kicked to the point where his finger was removed from the knuckle, a complete dislocation of his finger. And if you look at the x-ray, the finger goes here like this. It's just a shocking, complete dislocation. And even the defendant's expert said this was a very painful injury. And it occurred during the arrest, not in dispute. The plaintiff, of course, testified that he was screaming out in pain, begging for relief, asking for a doctor in the squad car, asking for a doctor in the police station. Only hours later, the police say, did they say, oh, he said his finger was bothering him, and a sergeant admitted his finger was pointed funny, and they took him to the hospital.
It's not
the
that key, many hours later. Really.
2 hours later.
Yeah. So
if your finger is off the knuckle, I think that's an extended period of time. But the key thing is on the excessive force claim, Your Honor, is that the police claim he made no complaint of injury, didn't call out and cry out in pain, never asked for a doctor in the squad car, and sat for 2 hours on a bench in the police department, never complained of an injury. Now, we know that he was injured. And so the only conceivable excuse to support or corroboration for the defendant's version of events, that he didn't cry out in pain when, in fact, he had this painful injury, was they seized upon this improperly admitted evidence that he had used heroin 5 to 6 hours earlier, which
but,
they didn't
but
know.
Could you explain to me the link between, as you see it, between excessive force in making the arrest and this broken finger, or this dislocated, really, finger? Why does the fact that the finger, how do these things link together?
Well, in two ways. One is, the plaintiff testified that he fled the police but then went to the ground.
He's resisting arrest, right?
No, he was not. He was not charged with resisting. There was no basis for force at the point in time he was taken into
custody. Well, he's running away, right?
He fled, and then he went to the ground. I mean, he was a big man, and he was caught, and he went down. As soon as he went down, the police descended on him, one in particular, began kicking him methodically and repeatedly.
But the photographic evidence doesn't show any bruises from that.
Actually, there's a dispute about what the photograph shows. He's a dark-complected gentleman, and we would contend the photograph shows some bruising. But he was laying on the ground face down, covering himself.
Why couldn't the jury have believed that as he falls to the ground, he pops a finger out?
Well, actually, there was no testimony to support that. The plaintiff's testimony is that he sustained the injury while being kicked. The officer surmised he might have been injured when he was pulled off of a chain-link fence, and there's no documentation of that incident occurring during the sequence of events. But the point is, to your question is, he was being kicked, and that's the excessive force. And he sustained the injury during the arrest. That's not in dispute. The fact that if he had this, well, we know he had this injury, the fact that they ignored what we claim was his complaints of pain for 2 hours, that's the denial of medical care.
Okay.
I want to make one, I know I'm in my extra time here, but what really hurt us here is the judge attempted to limit this to damages. He asked for the drug because he used the drug. The defendants need this evidence to have some plausible excuse for why they claim he didn't call out despite the fact that he had this injury. And in closing argument, in a calculated and cynical way, they ignored the judge's direction and specifically argued that he didn't feel pain because of his drug use, because he used heroin that day. They completely ignored the judge's attempt to limit this evidence. We don't think the limitation even was sufficient or could have been cured by a limiting instruction, especially the judge gave. But in closing argument, they completely abused this evidence and took it straight to liability. And this is a 5-day jury trial, and the jury was out for 3 days. And we think that kind of misconduct, intentional misconduct, mischaracterized in the defendant's brief as a mistake, should not be sanctioned. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. This court should affirm the judgment of the district court because Mr. Smith has failed to identify any abuse of discretion in any of the evidentiary rulings that were made by the district court in this case.
You know, I'm not sure that, I mean, if we were to affirm, that might not be your strongest point, because it seems to me, first of all, the district court is at best confusing about how this heroin evidence might or might not come in. rightly has a lot of concern about foundation. There are countless questions. How much did he take? How big is he? How long has he been an addict? How much of a dose would it take even to have an impact on him? And whether that's for purposes of damages or whether that's for purposes of any kind of liability inquiry, I don't actually think makes any difference. So I think the judge's first instinct was right. I am not clear, that said, that that the, I believe, perhaps erroneous admission of this evidence might or might not have been harmless error. So maybe you could talk about that for a minute.
About the issue of harmless error?
Yes, please.
Well, here, this even if it was error, which we obviously disagree.
No,
that,
we understand you have the,
right.
your position.
Even if it were considered error, it was clearly harmless. The examining physician at the emergency room, Dr. Wallace, testified that she did a head-to-toe examination of Mr. Smith and discovered absolutely no evidence that he had been beaten. According to his witnesses, the witnesses that Mr. Smith put on the stand, he had been beaten about his body for 10 to 15 minutes. Yet somehow when he got to the emergency room, he showed absolutely no signs of that happening.
And that's two and a half hours later?
It was approximately two and a half hours later, I believe. But that would certainly not be time for bruises to disappear. They would still be prominent. There's no.
So it's not just the photographs you're saying. It's Dr. Wallace's testimony as well.
Right, and she was an uninterested witness in this case. She had no stake on either side. She was just called in as an observation.
Well, she was the treating physician.
Yes, and she testified that there was no sign of any injuries, and that. That leads into, I believe, why the district court.
Well, any injuries other than this grotesque.
Other than the finger, I am definitely there. And there is no dispute at all that he was injured. It would be impossible to dispute that fact that he had that injury on his finger. But the story that he put in front of the jury was just wildly implausible. The odds that the jury would believe that he was beaten for this significant period of time, as he claimed, and show no signs. Anywhere.
So his theory of the finger injury is that it happens in the middle of being kicked or something?
Well, his initial story was that, and this was an issue he was impeached on, was that his hand, I believe, was lying flat on the ground. I believe it was palm up. It may have been palm down, but I believe it was palm up, and that there was a stomp, and that he was being stomped, and that was the cause of the dislocated finger. But as another expert witness for the defense testified, that would be impossible. The nature of the injury he suffered was more consistent with, as the defendant police officers testified, being pulled off of a fence that he was trying to climb and being pulled off the fence in the course of pursuit. It was consistent with that sort of injury, given the
This was the city's expert?
Yes.
Who testified that it couldn't have happened from a stomp.
Right, that it could not have happened from a stomp, as he originally testified. And Mr. Smith did change his story to say that there was kicking involved, but he was impeached that this was his original story, that it was a stomp, and that it would be physically impossible for it to have occurred that way. It was hyperextended, I believe. I hate to use the medical terminology because I'm not familiar entirely with what those terms mean, but I believe it was extended and off to the side, the way the finger was dislocated from his hand, and that could not have happened but by a stomp. It wasn't consistent. His story was falling apart.
So are we focusing solely on the events of December the 7th, or are we also looking at what happened at the end of the month?
Well, by the end of the month, there are serious issues with his case regarding the officers, his claims against the officers regarding the end of the month. By the time he was arrested the second time in his home, as opposed to during the chase on the 7th, there was testimony by the doctors that examined him. There's testimony that his finger had already died, that there was no further, that there might have been some underlying portion of the finger internally that was still alive, but it was dead by December 22nd, if I recall correctly. So 6 or 7, 8 days later, that there was no real further injury that could happen.
The
finger.
Treatment between the time of the incident and December 22nd date?
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear the first part of that question.
Is there any indication that he received treatment between the time of the incident and the December 20, 21st, whatever the date was?
There was some testimony that because he was on home release of some sort, that there were difficulties in him getting there. I'm not entirely clear on the details of that, but that appeared to, on the 22nd, to be his first visit back.
He went untreated.
Yes. And it seemed, from the testimony at trial, it appeared that it may have even been left wrapped as it was when he was there. It's not clear. I don't want to state anything definitive on that, but it had not been treated.
The finger from a dislocation is unusual.
Yeah, it seems fairly extraordinary, just
that's
in circumstances.
I thought his theory for the end of the month wasn't so much that people were, that it was more of a gratuitous infliction of pain theory, that the finger was obviously in very bad condition and that they poked it or punched it or whatever they did anyway.
Oh, well, yeah, he
isn't that his theory at least?
He claimed that they had, I believe that they grabbed his finger, that they'd put a knee on his hand to try to get information about a drug dealer, but the officers...
But I don't see how the heroin evidence has anything to do with what happened at the end of the month.
Oh, that was never intended to have anything to do with that. It was the heroin evidence here was solely for the purpose of explaining to give a motive, to give a reason, to answer why Mr. Smith acted so inconsistently, acted so strangely during his arrest, after he was arrested, leading up into the time he went to the emergency room. He was offered by Dr. Wallace, he was offered a digital block, which is basically a localized anesthetic that would just numb the finger so she could work on that. According to Dr. Wallace, he refused that digital block and requested by name a powerful morphine derivative called Dilaudid.
But we don't know that he knew it was a morphine derivative.
But that it was a pain reliever.
A pain reliever, you know, but I'm not sure how far you can go with the fact that he asks for it by name. You have to believe, you have to take the position that he is an addict, and I'm not sure whether that's of even the slightest relevance to how hard the police were kicking him or, you know, whether they happened to hit his foot or even if they managed to pull him off the fence in an unduly rough way. I didn't think that the Constitution had an exception for heroin addicts, so I just don't know why that matters.
Oh, of course it doesn't go to, and that was not the grounds that the district court admitted this evidence on. It wasn't to the reasonableness of their actions in the arrest. That fell totally to the testimony of the officers saying that they pulled him off the fence, they did not assault him, they did not attack him. What this went to was purely the issue of damages.
And I don't see how it can even do that without some foundation, frankly. Because you have to assume that he's not in pain and that he's really just, as I put it, trying to get a free fix. You have to make a lot of assumptions on the basis of nothing, basically.
Well, a few responses there. First, it was not that he was not in any pain at all. This went to the severity of the pain. He claimed that this was on a scale of 10 out of 10. This was the most severe pain imaginable. It was a 10. The worst pain he could possibly imagine was what he said he was experiencing. But on top of that, there was an officer that the sergeant that came in, and I believe it was the sergeant that ultimately had him taken to the emergency room, said he was napping at the time. It said that he never complained to anybody. When he got to the emergency room, Mr. Smith did not indicate that he refused the digital block, he refused the localized anesthetic. Despite saying that this was the worst pain imaginable, he requested a specific painkiller by name.
Well, some people don't trust locals. You know, they're afraid they're going to feel something.
Well, the thing here is that there is a...
He didn't admit he asked for it. He denied
it. He denied it, correct. But it was... He requested...
He said.
Right. And it was, but it was between someone who had a strong interest in exaggerating his pain
and
a doctor with
that
no...
That the questionnaire... shows an answer to the question, is there obvious pain or injury? Answer, yes. So, I mean, I think there's a fair amount of evidence that he was in bad shape.
Are you referring specifically to the lockup keeper?
Yeah, well, the lockup keeper also observes that he's in distress. That's why the police don't take everybody to the hospital. They take him to the hospital because they think he needs it, I assume.
Well, you know, as for the lockup keeper, it appeared that lockup keeper's report was made after he returned from the emergency room when his hand would have been already wrapped. So it's no surprise there that someone would say his injury is obvious. I mean, if it was wrapped up by the nurse, that'd be an obvious injury. And the testimony from the officers was before he said nothing about his hand. He did not act as if he was in pain. He did not complain about it until the sergeant spoke to him and he said, Mr. Smith said, my finger's injured. It was then that he went to the emergency room and began screaming, yelling, acting, exhibiting drug-seeking behavior, refusing treatment, refused the x-ray that would have allowed the doctor, treating physician, to finish his treatment. If he was really seriously contending that he was in the worst pain imaginable, the jury could seriously question why he would not allow the doctor to finish treatment, to take an x-ray, confirm the finger was back in position before sending him home. Instead, he asked for a specific painkiller, which implies he knew that it was a painkiller. He wouldn't have asked for something he didn't know what it was. That would be very unusual to just throw a name up in the air and say, give me that. He said, he requested Dilaudid. The doctor gave him Dilaudid, and when that happened, he left. And that left to a strong...
We're out of time.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to respond to the question. Thank you very much. We respectfully request that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
How much time?
You
have 1 minute to...
I just want to briefly address this issue of the harmlessness. This evidence should never have gone in based on the variety of matters with the foundation and so on. This evidence was used by the defense and considered by the jury on the issue of liability. The suggestion that it was harmless is a complete mischaracterization of the impact. Look at the closing argument by the defense after they were specifically warned by the judge that this goes to the issue of damages and how much pain he sustained. The counsel for the defense said, why didn't he complain, referring to the fact that he allegedly said nothing at the scene, nothing in the police car, nothing at the station when he had this terrible injury. Is it because he took heroin earlier that day? Objection. Sustained.
He was out in the cold earlier that day.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Because he stood out in the cold, so
right,
how far was it?
Yeah, but also they surmise maybe it's because he took heroin. Objection, sustained. He continued along those lines. Why did he do it? Why did he do it? Why didn't he complain? Only he knows. They use this to morph, to improperly bootstrap their defense on the issue of liability, deprive the plaintiff of a fair trial. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to all counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. Move to the